it feels a little bit sad almost. This is the fifth recording with Beverly that I've just had, or fifth conversation that is being recorded, I should say. And as always, kind of no defined starting point, an ending point that just kind of shows up, and a heck of a lot of meanders in the middle. Riffing on Connection, which is episode 20 with Gary, that was released a couple of days before this recording took place. We speak about that, and we speak about humanity. Beverly teaches, is setting up a course on professionalism for med students, if I remember correctly. And humanity is a good thing there. Yeah. I hope you enjoy.
Hi, Helena.
Hi. I was sitting in the garden eating lunch that also was my breakfast because I hadn't eaten before. And it's a gorgeous summer day. So with like 20 minutes to go, it's like, oh, just a little bit of gardening. So I've potted a few plants and stuff. And then, you know, it's like, ah, now it's pod time.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
It's morning here, so the only thing I've made is coffee and breakfast for a whole lot of critters.
You have a whole lot of critters to feed. Yeah. How are you?
I'm okay. This is a little bit of a crazy time, beginning of the semester for all of the students. We have a staggered semester start, so they start at three different times. I'm teaching in four different classes, and some of them are very different from each other, so I often feel like my brain is like ping pong. And I'm teaching... Actually, the best thing that happened yesterday, something that didn't happen. I'm doing workshops for faculty, which I enjoy. But the class that I was teaching last night was mostly for clinicians, and, you know, clinicians everywhere just slammed. So all of their clinics were running late. I had just one person who was able to come, and this is not the kind of session you can teach to one person. So we decided to delay the more formal thing, but I was talking to her about what she had planned to do for the session. They each work on a specific piece of their own teaching. And it turns out she's a resident, and the case that she had prepared to speak about was a complex one in terms of medical professionalism. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so lucky I got to meet you, because those are exactly the things I want to include in a new course I'm developing for our med students on professionalism. So it was just, you know, it was the perfect non-occurrence.
That's great to hear.
Yeah. So that those little bits of, I don't know, synchronicity, swipsy, whatever you want to call it, are fun.
Yeah.
So you get to take something that you could get just grumpy about and turn it into
a thrill. Like, hey. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting about that, though. A tweet flew by me the other day of somebody basically saying,
I don't know what it is about med school, what it is that I do to medical students, you know, because somewhere along the line, they seem to forget that people are human, that patients are human. It's like, where's the humanity? It's like, it should be put in there, but it seems like it's taken out of there. And I can understand where that comes from. And I also think that my mom, who is now retired, she was a general practitioner for, you know, and she started late. She started to study for going to med school when I was 4, 5, 6, 7, something. So she was like 30 plus when she started to go to med school. So she'd like already lived and been married and divorced and kids and worked and stuff. So I know that a lot of her patients have throughout the years been so happy with her being so human and treating them as human. So I think it is interesting, a course of professionalism and what that entails.
So for me, there are multiple levels of that. One is they need to find a center for themselves. They, in order to recognize humanity in others, they have to recognize it in themselves. And developing the belief system in a way that will underlay their professional approach. Not that we're dictating that in any way, just that they, I mean, perhaps it's my perspective now that I'm way older than med students.
Just a tad.
That you, if you have a system that your beliefs fit into, it actually makes things easier, although it's not always easy to figure it out in the first place, that you have to wrestle with, you know, what do I think about that concept? What how am I going to treat a patient who says, I do not want extreme measures if I feel that all, you know, you have to fight for life up to the end. And so, you know, recognizing their own choices, recognizing respect for others' choices, being able to recognize what's in the system around them and what they think upholds their values and what they think works against their values, and perhaps they want to work to change. That's part of something we're doing with them this fall. So it part of it is literally the rules, because there are very distinct rules for managing interaction between physicians and patients. And part of it is understanding the values. In that, that's not so much taught as uncovered. The approach to how you drill down to values can be taught. They can learn to access some skills, but their values have to come from within. It is a little scary to step into that, to be vulnerable enough to say, I don't know what I value in this arena, and I have to figure that out. It requires a certain type of honesty.
And it's interesting because values, it's like the values I hold, I believe, are seen in my actions. But whether or not I know what those values are, that's a whole nother story, right? So it is that naming, kind of, you know, seeing something within and going, huh, it's one of those. It's like, I didn't know that one. right? It's like, I thought I had one of these, but no, it was one of those. It's like, yeah. And it's interesting. I don't know if you've listened to episode 20 with Gary that was released this week. It's Thursday today. It was released on Tuesday.
I saw the email and I have not yet. I often listen to stuff when I'm walking and Tuesday, did it rain? Yeah, I think it rained all day Tuesday, so I didn't get to walk.
No. So I think it would be interesting to hear your thoughts on that, because we speak a lot about connection from the basis of Gary being an interfaith chaplain volunteer at the local hospital. Talking about, you know, the push and pull of connection. You know, when there's a pull between two people, it's like, oh, yeah, give me more. But when there's a push, you know, it's like, nah, really don't like you. Can I turn and walk the other way? If you're in a professional role, which he is, even though he's volunteering, right? It's like, you have to be there regardless. You have to be able to see and honor and recognize the push that's there away from, but offer your services, you know, stepping up to that. And he says it's one thing when he does it, when he's the one who says, oh, no, not you. But when the patients that he comes to offer says, oh, no, not you, and that awakens things in him, which, you know, invariably it will, how you have to do your homework. How you have to, not there and, you know, not then and there, right? But taking care of that thing. What happens in me when somebody rejects me or, you know, don't want to accept my help or my services or my silence or presence or whatever? And I think it's a little bit, you know, it's a valid thing to sprinkle on top of this that we're talking about right here, because it is fascinating, because I realize that when I coach, I always do a type of audition with my potential clients, which is also an audition of me for them, right? So we get to feel it out. Is there a push or a pull? And so far, I haven't gone further with anybody where there's a push. I don't want to be with you. It's like, no, I don't need that, because I don't coach that many people. But, you know, as a medical doctor or a volunteer chaplain at a hospital or a teacher, sorry, but you have a professional role to step into regardless if there's a push and a pull.
Yeah. And so being able to find the underlying humanity and... I've seen kind of both sides of that. My dad was pretty feisty and did not have much use for any formalized religion. Even our own, we're Jewish. So a couple times when he had been in hospital and they would say, oh, we could have the chaplain come by. And he's like, oh, hell no. Even though I think many hospital chaplains are non-denominational and are just there for any kind of discussion you need to have with somebody who's willing to listen.
Precisely.
I'm not big on sort of proselytory kinds of religions, but there are some very Christian, right? It's like Nadia Boltz-Weber. Oh, my goodness. I would go to her church.
Yeah.
She's fabulous because she is so human within her faith. And I think it's that part of reaching for the human in another, even when that other is by their actions or their affect is somebody that, you know, on the surface is like, oh, that's kind of repugnant.
That reminds me of, there's a couple of On Being episodes, I think, where Krista has talks with people of different denomination. But there's one in particular that I'm thinking of a Christian priest, a Muslim imam, and a Jewish rabbi. And it is just the most wonderful conversation, you know, because it is just this, the shared humanity, you know, is so apparent, and the respect and the humor and the curiosity and the, I really don't think that where I come from, it's like this, you know, it's like, it's just a great conversation. I'll see if I can find it so I can link to it. But that thing about the shared humanity is so important, especially now, I would say, especially in the times that we're in right now.
Yeah, it's what I call the yes and.
Yeah.
And when you say yes and instead of yes but, you're opening instead of pushing. It's a conversational, I won't say trick, it's a way to open yourself and invite others to remain open. It when we're so cut off from each other because of, you know, COVID or politics or oceans or whatever, it is important to find every connection you can. Real connection. You know, we're online constantly. In fact, there some days it's like, okay, I'm putting this phone under a pillow, and that's better than under a pond, but
it gets a bit expensive if you throw them in the pond. And every time you're sick of them, it's like, oh yeah, no, I need to buy a new one. Yeah, again. That wouldn't be the best. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. So the courses that you're, or the classes that you're giving now, is it Zoom still, or is it both and, or is it just in person?
So all of my graduate classes are by Zoom, which it's sad. I teach communications for graduate students. It's so hard to do over only the video platforms. I mean, the students roll with it. They're good. I have my biggest class in years this year for communications, which requires a little bit of... It's 10. But when you're having students do some form of presentation every week and playing back, that's a lot.
I
love that class because I always have this odd mix of people who are in different programs and have different backgrounds and interests, so that's, it's kind of cool to see the mix. So I have two folks who are from the Middle East, both very shy, and one is has a very strong chemistry background. One is a humanities background. I have a MD PhD student, and they always kind of come in like, you know, but they are more advanced in their education because they come in after their second year of med school. So they've got some stuff under, you know, they've under had the some belts. Mileage. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's all on Zoom. My med school lectures It's actually even worse. My lectures for the School of Medicine are all pre-recorded. There's no faces, not even on Zoom. But I get to do flip sessions with them, which is what I'm doing later today. So I go in, I have some prepared questions and thoughts for them, and we spend some time talking about it, which means, depending on the size of the room, I can literally walk a mile and a half in class because I'm pacing around. So that it's a little bit odd because they're all at tables, they're all masked. I have a hearing deficit, so
it's tricky.
Constantly. It's like, okay, you got to shout. But at least I get to talk to them, and it makes such a difference. I did a flip session last week, and the building where those are held is the same building as the PA program. Well, I did teach in person for the PA students, physician assistant, last spring. And they were in their class. One of the women came out and says, "Oh, hi, how are you?" And she's chatting. It's like, we're doing peds now. It's like, those babies are different. I'm like, yeah. I taught human reproduction, so they got all the way up to having a baby.
And now they're doing that piece. Yeah.
But that, you know, again, it's that connection that you make in person when you can see all of a person.
Yeah.
It's different when there's not this... I mean, it's a fairly permeable glass wall, but it is a glass wall.
It is.
And it, you know, it allows us to travel between West Virginia and Sweden.
Yeah.
Which is pretty amazing.
Tuesday, I was in a Zoom meeting with two other parties, one who was also by herself, and then two people who were in a conference room. And that conference room had one of those wall-mounted cameras, and it was so up. So it looked so I could see almost all of them, because I could see the entire table, and, you know, six chairs and these two people sitting on the chair. But it was so from above that it looked as if I was looking down into an aquarium, you know, a little glass bowl filled with you know,
people.
Yeah, it's like, it was just, oh. So that made me see how used I've gotten to seeing kind of your face and upper body, shoulders, you know. It's like, that's what you see nowadays. But here was like all of them, but from this really weird angle. So it made me, you know, it was different enough that it made me stop and say,
yeah,
this is different. And it does make
cameras.
A difference. Yeah, they're kind of creepy because they can try to follow you around, and you go, you know, Big Brother is watching. That's the feeling I get, at least. But it is interesting how connection can feel different based on if you're there physically with somebody or not. And that's what me and Gary spoke about, but it's like, oh no, that's what we spoke about in the recording we did last week, which won't be released until, you know, a couple of weeks on. But this, just realizing that I'm kind of Zoom tired.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There was I don't exactly remember how long ago it was, but I had one week where I had been on screens so much for various things that literally sitting at the computer for half an hour, I would have a blinding headache saying, okay, I can't do screens this much. It's just not the you know, it's the distance, it's the backlight, it's all kind of it, not being able to move around. You know, it's like I need I need an iPad holder that comes out from here so I can like walk around.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, if I do zoom on my phone, it's in my pocket. So either if the camera accidentally gets activated, they don't see anything anyway.
Yeah. And it makes me wonder, it's like, will there be a time when you could be sitting here across the table from me and we could be having this discussion with you as a hologram or a, you know, a... Or do I have my virtual glasses on so that it looks as if you're sitting there or something? And what happens with that? Because, I mean, the mind is a fascinating creature, right? I can think about doing Qigong and my vagus system, my vagus nerve just goes into, ooh, relax. Calm, peace, right? So we can think about things and, you know, you can make up memories in your head that hasn't happened, but your entire body, your entire system believes it has because you thought it, right? So what will happen when you're there, but you're actually not there? I could try to touch you. I wouldn't be able to touch you, but you're still there in a way that is not, because here you're kind of very obviously not sitting at my kitchen table, right?
Yeah. So it's funny you say that. I was just thinking, I know so many people now through online means, through TCW and through WIC, the Akimbo platforms, that I feel very close to. And I realized, I know some about their lives. I know about what they're doing creatively. And I realize I have no idea how tall any of them are. Mm. It's like that aspect of physical presence is missing, that interpersonal energy that I'm not even sure a hologram completely...
If it would capture it, yeah.
Yeah, there's... You know, there are levels of emotional and physical energy that come with physical presence. That,
which, I mean, is one of the reasons why I prefer to read a physical book over on Kindle or, you know, on my phone or something. Because when I read a physical book, I can know, was it on the right or the left side? Was it top or bottom on the side? Was it at the very beginning of the book, in the middle or in the end? I have a tactile memory of kind of in the middle, on the left, up, you know, and then I don't have that many pages to flip through. Whereas if I remember what it was, it's much easier to find on the Kindle if I know one specific word and it's not, you know, and or but or any of those words. You know, it's like if it's something particular, I can find it through searching, but I don't have a clue as to where in the book it is. It's not an embodied, I don't have an embodied relationship with it.
There's no map.
There's no physical map to it. Yeah.
It's interesting you say that. I've been noticing something in myself and I've seen it with students. I have almost a form of kinetic memory that if I am, you know, watching a TV show and maybe fiddling around with a game on my phone, I can call up a memory of something in that show. If I'm still playing that same game, there's something connected about the movement of my hands and what my brain is experiencing. And I had a student who had a learning difference some years ago, and she was often not like randomly fidgety, but she was often like doing something else in class. And she said, this is how I remember. So she had that aspect of, you know, she was very ingrained in that kinetic memory. So in that, it's like when I walk and listen to podcasts or books, audiobooks, when I hit the same place in the hill, I can remember what I was listening to at that point. So there's something about movement. And this is very true of kids. They process information while moving, which is why making them sit in classrooms forever is really not helpful for them. I'm pretty sure it's not all that helpful for med students either.
I'm pretty sure it's not helpful for anybody really, but except maybe for the teacher or the system behind it, because it makes it easy to process. You know, it's a process-oriented aspect rather than, you know, what is it that we want to make happen? What is the shift that we want? Yeah.
If I remember better and very precisely, if I'm moving, then, you know, what do I need to do for my students so that they can access those forms of memory too? And I'm not sure yet, but that there's definitely something there that, you know, it's like, can you dance the periodic table? I mean,
You probably could. I mean, you do have those, the nursery rhymes of the alphabet and do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, so. You know, it's like there's those types of things that can also then induce movement and sounds and...
people don't have trouble remembering song lyrics. Most of the time, if they sing a song, they remember it. They remember the rhythm, they remember the melody, they remember the words. But trying to, even if they took the same thing and tried to recite it as a poem, not having the music with it, it's...
And I sing in a choir. And it is really, really interesting how I actually think that in my choir, we're basically never mandated to learn things without the sheet music. So we're allowed to have the sheet music in front of us when we're singing, when we're performing. And sometimes our choir master challenges us. No, you can't look at this one now. You know it. You know, songs that we've sung for years. And me and the other is like, oh, we go all crazy and nervous and no, I won't remember. And how is that? So I think it is also a skill that a lot of grown-ups have, you know, we don't practice it enough. Young kids in a choir who don't know how to read, sorry, dude, the only option is for them to learn it by heart, right? Once you learn how to read, you can kind of skip that learn it by heart aspect. And so we have one piece that is my absolute favorite piece. It's a Stabat Mater that Jens wrote for us and with us in 2016. And we've performed it a number of times. Maybe seven, well, whatever. But and you know, before each of those, we've had to practice it, and we've sung, you know, because there's like six or seven pieces in it, six, seven, I think. So we've sung a number of those like individually too. But I love this piece, so I don't know how many times I've just had it on repeat on Spotify, because it's on Spotify. So even, you know, I have listened to it over and over and over again. And so I can tell that here's a piece where I'm not far from knowing it by heart, because it has, like you said, it is now, it is in me somehow. But a lot of the other pieces is like, I don't dare rely on my memory. I don't dare rely on the fact that, well, I should know this song. I probably do, and just riff it. But he's like, oh no, I don't know it. I'm, you know, oh. And I think it would be very, very beneficial for more of us to practice, just to challenge it. And I mean, I'm not saying you need to know the German verbs or whatever it is and the conjugations here and there. It's like, no, that's not the thing. But now and then challenging your memory and your, you know, your recall, it's a good thing.
Yeah. As I've been learning Italian for 2.5 years, and it is challenging. Well, a lot of what I have difficulty with is verb conjugations, because they've got some odd tenses. But the more you do it, the more it starts to feel natural. I just bought a book of fiction in both English and Italian, and I have the physical ones. So I haven't started it yet, but I think kind that will
parallel
be fun.
Read it?
Yeah. Just try to read the Italian and then read the English. And there are a couple TV shows I've watched where they're in Italy. One of them is a cooking show. And I find I do understand some of the spoken Italian without the subtitles. As long as it's not real fast and covered up with other sounds. So it's like, oh, they actually do speak the way I learned it. Which is fun. But that learning another language is, again, it's that combination of kinetic and mnemonic or whatever it is that you have to get the feel for it. I don't know any songs in Italian. I mean, other than
O sole mio.
Yeah,
and then I don't know caro.
Figaro. I know a few lines from Italian opera.
So, on learning, I've taken Lindy Hop classes for, I think I started again in 2017, maybe.
Yeah, I've taken swing classes a long time ago.
I love it. I just love it. I took it 20 years ago, and then I stopped. It was like, when the kids are grown, I'm going to start. And so I've taken it for a couple of years again, sort of, and I love it. I love the music. I love the dance. I love the sounds, the looks, the kind of the general. I love it. So I am now taking a D class, which is 10 lessons that started March of 2020. So we did 3 classes and then, sorry, no dancing allowed. And then last fall, now dancing allowed again if you do this and that and the other thing. Kind of, you know, in not everybody dances with everybody, but you can have 2 or 3 couples can share and you know, clean and whatever. So we did 3 lessons then too. And then November hit and just no dancing allowed again. And all spring, it hasn't been on. And then Tuesday, 2 days ago. So lesson number 7 of these 10 was finally time for it. And the last time I danced was end of October last year.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And it is so interesting because it's like, what do I remember? What don't I remember? What did we do last session? It was like, that's a year ago. I really don't remember. But somehow it's there in my body.
Yeah.
It is there. And Lindy Hop for me is kind of the same. I have the same type of feeling that I do about English. Or Swedish for that matter. But I mean, I'm natively Swedish, so I don't even bother about that. But I know we've spoken about this in other sessions, but I don't do grammar. I don't speak grammatic. I don't understand. I'm not interested. I don't have a flair for it at all. But my English is really good. Both written mm-hmm. and spoken is like, because I know what it's supposed to sound like. I know how it's supposed to read. And Lindy is somehow the same. It's like, it just fits me. It's like a dress you put on and it's just, ooh, this is like it was, you know, hand sewn for me specifically. It just fits. And we were doing, because we'd ended with doing, Charleston kicks of various type, which, you know, if you do the Charleston style in Lindy, it's fairly quick. So it was like an hour and a half of aerobics.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Heart pumping, sweat just, you know, oozing. And now, today, my hips, my knees, my thighs, my feet are telling me, oh, you were moving, girl. but it was such a treat to finally get on it. And at the same time, I really don't like what COVID has done with me because COVID has made me somewhat hesitant and afraid of people, you know? And I've had COVID. I know that I'm kind of, you know, I have antibodies and whatnot. And everybody's like, well, if they have a cold or a COVID, they won't come and this and that. And we also did, you know, I just danced with two partners. But still, it's like, you know, you're constantly putting disinfectant on your hands and just, and I don't, it's like a filter coming in between me and other people when I meet people physically, and I don't really like it at all.
Yeah, I've felt the same thing. It is hard enough for an introvert to meet new people, to interact easily, and to have all these additional filters, it can be very isolating.
Yeah.
I talk to my mom every week, and I haven't seen her in person for almost 2 years because she lives some ways away, and when everything first locked down where she lives, she's in an independent apartment, but in a building that is all older adults. So the director, like, basically said no one can come in. So they were cut off from their family, and it was awful. She would go out to see my brother lives in the same town. And so they would pick her up and take her to dinner. And they, you know, they were careful. They,
they kind of bubbled with her a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they have two kids. And
yeah.
So and I understand the actions of the director, particularly at the beginning when, you know, they really were not sure, and that, you know, seniors were just so vulnerable. So that's the one hand. On the other hand, they didn't have any transportation. They have the place is supposed to drive them places, and they wouldn't take them anywhere other than physician appointments. So they really were cut off, which is, it's hard. You know, I was here voluntarily because it's like, I am not going out there. But I have, you know, I've got my pets and I have friends here that I talk to every day, even if I wasn't seeing them. So it was.
And it was your choice.
Yeah, it was my choice. Nobody was telling me, you can't go do that.
Precisely.
You know, I still had a choice to go in to work, but I still often work from home because when masks are required on campus, if you're in your office, you either have the door closed or if you have it open, you have a mask on. And if I'm just sitting at a computer, I don't know why I need to drive half an hour to sit at a computer when I have one here. So it is that cutting off from others has been hard. It's also an opportunity to say, okay, when we can add back, what do I want to add back? Mm-hmm. What do I want to add new? What am I saying? Okay, we'll let go of that one.
Have you thought about that? What will you add on, back on, or anew?
A lot of what I miss are the more creative things, like doing readings.
Mm-hmm.
Like getting together with other people to talk about creative stuff. I have one friend, we're kind of bubbled in together because we don't see any, you know, see almost no one else. And he's pretty creative. A new person moved in next door, and I've said hello to her. It's like, hi. You
know? Waving from a distance.
Yeah. I know her name, and I know that she has a dog. But, you know, you hesitate to encroach. Because at the time, I think I had come in from a walk. I was sweaty, smelly, and barefoot. So she probably didn't want to get any closer.
Hi, can I come in?
No, she would just pulled up. So.
No, please not. Somebody told me on Badoo the other thing. I was asking them, you know, well, something or other, you know, what about a relationship and what he wanted from a relationship. And he listed all of these, like, you know, go to the movies and now to dinner and concerts and going hiking and going to museums and traveling and this and that and the other thing, all of them out amongst people, basically. And I said, oh, and I kind of just want to sit in a corner in the sofa and read a book or maybe out in the garden, you know. And he said, well, I do that too, but there's been too little of this, so I want more of that. And I'm thinking, I don't want that much of that, honestly. I do love the Lindy. That is very apparent. I was thinking Tuesday evenings, like, should I, shouldn't I, should I, shouldn't I? And then I actually asked my body, because my mind was saying, no, it's too, you know, you shouldn't. I asked my body, do I want to go? And my body said, yes, you do want to go. So I did. And I'm so happy I did, because I do love it.
Yeah, there's
and I've started to, me and my sister, you know, it's like we kind of, she lives in the same town as I do. And, you know, whenever we meet up, it's just lovely to meet up. But then it's like, we should do this again soon. And then 9 months pass, you know, it's like, it just doesn't happen. So this time we've been going three times, 2-3 weeks in between, just having dinner and going skinny dipping down by the ocean for as long as it's skinny dipping weather. And we've decided that whenever we have one of those, we set the date for the next time so that we don't say, yeah, we'll set a date. But no, we actually set a date. So that's turned into a bit of a tradition, and I'm really enjoying that. So I am a bit Zoom tired. I know I want the interesting and lovely and tankespjani and just fun connections and conversations that I'm having over Zoom. I do want that in physical presence of other people too. Yeah. So I'm adding in a little bit of that, but I still don't want to travel anywhere. I still don't really want to go anywhere. I don't, you know, it's like, no, going to the movies. The theater? No.
I was never big on movies.
It's like, no.
A lot of the stuff I like to do comes back from my family background. So I love cooking and feeding people. I get that from my dad. Mm. And so now with this, I've been taking pasta classes. And
I've seen that.
Yeah. So the... And, you know, you start doing a technique like bread making or pasta making, and you find the sweet spot. And I have finally found a real sweet spot with a really fine ground semolina flour, and the technique of putting the dough together. It actually does come together really fast if you rest it properly, which you can't in an online class because they don't have 3 hours to... It's like, okay, go have a glass of wine while we sit for half an hour. And the really fine semolina makes the pasta so easy to roll out, and it's so tender. It's like, oh my God, this is what it's supposed to be. It's like the idea, now that I have it right, it's like, I want to make this for somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, I can. Yeah, I had my sister-in-law's daughter and her, so niece, I guess, my niece and her boyfriend came over to cook with me. And we cooked and we talked. And that was actually also really, really lovely. So yeah, I'm just like, yes, I do want that, but I'd prefer if people come here. I was like, I don't really want to cook for people, but come here and cook with me, and I'd be really, really happy. Or, you know, yeah, I can take the bike down to the ocean with my sister. It's like 30, 35 minutes by bike. 10 kilometers. So he's like, yeah, that works. But I, you know, there's been a lot of positives with this pandemic for me personally. It has been, it's like you say, it has given me the opportunity to think about those things. What ingredients do I have in my life? Which ones I don't really like that flavor. You know, okay, I can remove that one. I really lack this flavor. Okay, how can I add that in?
Yeah, the opportunity to make deliberate choices mm-hmm. is... that can be a little scary. It's like, you know what, you mean I have to actually actively choose who to associate with and where to go? And yeah, you get, again, it's that going back to listening to that inner voice of your body. It's like, what do I really need in this moment? It's like, well, today I need to go teach, then I need to come home, eat a good lunch, and really sit down with XYZ and calm down with it. So if you're able to listen to those inner voices, now that the outside has calmed down quite a bit, you can say, you know, in order to do my work today, I need to go into the office for 3 hours because I want to do X, Y, Z. When that's done, I'm done. Mm-hmm. You get to unplug from constantly having to check outside expectations. Because, was that expectation reasonable, and did you actually have to listen to it? But it's always an interesting question. It's like, well, why am I forcing myself to get up earlier than I want to and go to work earlier than I want to sit and stare at a computer screen and go, what am I doing here? who wants to do that?
And there are a lot of us who can ask that question. There's a lot of people who can't. Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, there's a privilege there.
There's a lot of us who can. And of those who can, how many are? How many are asking that question? How many are actively thinking about kind of, you know, owning your agency? You have agency. How are you using it?
Yeah. And one of the things I see in some of the business publications that I read occasionally is that more people are asking those questions, which is really interesting, and much younger people. You know, it's not unexpected that somebody in the 40s or 50s would say, oh, wait a minute, But now you're seeing it in people in their 20s and 30s. I read a book called The Promise of a Pencil. A guy named Aaron Braun.
Promise of a Pencil?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was one of these, you know, young guns who gets a business degree, gets an advertising job, and just rockets upward in his organization. So he was pretty young, making quite a good living, or making a good salary. He wasn't too happy with the living. And just finding, he was driving at work, but had lost his way to himself, was aware enough to realize that, went traveling. He took a sabbatical from his job. He was able to arrange that, took a sabbatical from his job, went to Asia, and just started talking to people that he met along the way. And he was talking to some children somewhere that had very little in terms of material goods. And he said, you know, if you could have anything, what would you want? And the kid said, I want a pencil. Like, a pencil so I can draw. And something as simple as a pencil and paper means education in some places that don't, where people don't have a lot. And so he started a foundation to build schools in areas that did not have access to education for these young kids. And it literally went global. He started a really successful nonprofit at quite a young age because he asked that question. I mean, this is well before COVID. It was like 2014 or something. And the book is really interesting because when he wrote it, he's like, yeah, you're not ripe yet, honey. You know, it's still very young, but realizing stuff, you know, 15 years before I was aware of it, that it's like, yeah, you get to make these conscious choices. You just because you are making a fabulous salary doing this job that you hate doesn't mean you have to stick with it. You can go run a nonprofit and be unsure of what money is coming in because there are better things than money coming your way when you find your mission and follow it. And for people who genuinely have that mission that they want to follow, not finding it is like having a broken leg that won't heal. They're constantly just limping and in pain. There are some folks who have missions that are different scale, you know, so building rural schools for every kid who needs one in the world, that's a big goal. If there are folks who have a scope that's closer to home, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that either, that my goal is to raise my kids to be the best humans they can be.
That's a worthy goal too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. My goal is to grow a garden so that I can feed my neighbors. Smaller, but still from here.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, right? That's the hook. Does it come from within you? Kind of like that values thing.
Yeah.
I read on Twitter today, somebody said, if you hate your 9-to-5, don't wait until you're 60 or 65 to act on it. Which is kind of that, you know, yeah, you might be making a good salary, but what of the rest? And there are people who make a good salary or a great salary and don't really enjoy that, but then have the richness of the rest of the time so that the one pays for the other, you know, however that looks, go ahead, you know? But again, that is also about that agency thing. It's like taking responsibility for me, right? Where am I energized? Where am I resourced? Where am I nourished? How am I being all of those things? And what? It's like you say, it's like that's what COVID gives an opportunity to do here. It's like looking at, okay, these things they drain me. I don't enjoy them. I don't like the people I'm engaging with or whatever it is. Okay, what can you do to get those out of the way and something else in that place? Or what can you do to shift that experience? Maybe you can stay at the job, but you shift something about it so that you have a different thought, you get a different colleague, you get a different position, or, you know, you just marry it with singing the church choir you know, it's like, it's not, there really isn't one way of doing that. But I think a lot of people could definitely learn to listen more within.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for some folks, that's just, that's an uncomfortable place to go, because within may be suggesting a change that feels scary.
Yeah.
You know, that it's like, I've, you know, thinking I've been a public school teacher for this many years, and it's the outside strictures are so hard. What I really want to do is use my teaching skills to build online courses that I can record and put on, you know, platform ABCD, whatever. And then I can go and volunteer with this group or that group, and, or, you know, maybe I can go build my garden or volunteer at the children's hospital, or, you know, the finding that way of using your skills that speaks to you, that builds that bigger thing that you've always wanted to contribute to.
Yeah, it's and it's interesting with a resisting change. Oblique strategies. Brian Eno, I think, singer, songwriter, whatever he was.
Yeah, is, Talking Heads.
Talking Heads, yeah. So he has, there's a oblique strategies. You probably know it, but not everybody. It's like, I think it started as a deck of cards with these statements that just, it's tankespian through and through. And it exists as an app. So I have it as an app, and I have it on sort of my, on my phone in such a way that I see one of these. It shifts every 12 hours or something. I get a new card. And the other day, it read, openly resist change. And I was laughing at it because it's like, ugh, that is, it's like we're taught the other way, you know, it's like, oh no, you should be wanting change. And I like change. So for me, this was like, oh, this is tankespian. Openly resist change. No, I don't want to. Which is openly resisting change. So it was fun to get that one, because some of them are like really, really just, they're tricky.
I'm pretty good at resisting change. I have a built-in skeptic gene. It's like, you want to what? That, well, I mean, not for it. Mostly around work. It's like, we have to do what? Yeah. That. That sounds like fun, just sort of that, to poke the bear.
Precisely, which is what I think Oblique Strategies does. It pokes my bear quite severely now and again. Even though I think I'm quite prone to change. I quite like it. But not everywhere. Which Caspian takes a delight in pointing out to me now and again. I don't like the new WordPress editor thingy. It's like, no, give me the
Oh, my God. Yeah, software stuff from the freaking devil. From the devil. And WordPress is that block editor. Oh, my God.
What I know. Sucks, I hate it. Right?
Sucksville.
It's like, away with you. There's things with the old one that I really don't like, but I like it a lot more than I like the new thingy, because I can't make it go where I want it to go. Stuff.
It's Dad, like, it's a gigantic pain in the arse.
I'm glad. Caspian will tell us this is because we're like, you know, kind of as old as the dinosaurs. So, and he's right, perhaps, but I give him that.
Hey. Tyrannosaurus Rex had tiny arms, but big teeth.
True. Very true. So, this is our fifth conversation, Beverly.
That's amazing.
It is quite amazing.
It always feels like the first one.
Yeah. Which it is in a way, right? It is, because all of them are what they are. They're not a continuum in that way that we have the same agenda and we just keep on. So you're right. But I'm a bit curious about what what's it been like? What have you seen? What's anything?
So for me, it reignites that delight in conversing. That I always had with my father. He was somebody I was very close to. He was extremely well-read, very passionate about the things he believed in, and just always learning something new. This is what I loved about him. He would find something and he would go all the way. So he learned how to do target shooting, and he was loading his own ballistics and literally running experiments. He'd put so many grains into this bullet and so many into that, and test how far it would go. So he was learning calculus to be able to project the bullet flight. And this was in his 70s. So he never stopped being interested in the world around him. He was also an educator, taught every grade from preschool to postdoc.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. There were some things that he just wasn't not interested in, in a lot of faith-based stuff. But he was always willing to talk. And so we had these conversations that would range. I would go up there for a week every summer, and basically all we did was talk and cook. We would sometimes go and hike around a few places, but we talked and we cooked. And that having that open conversation just constantly was such a delight, because while you're exploring the other person's thoughts and ideas, you're also exploring your own. So it is a sort of a voyage of mutual discovery, which is lovely. So I get a lot of that feeling from the way we talk together and float around between realms and go beyond the everyday into what's behind that. What's your experience? I mean, you've talked to lots of different people over this period.
I've talked to lots of different people. It is fun how there's so many shared experiences. Like my experience is the same regardless if it's you or Frank or Allison or Gary or Mike, but that there's also like very distinctly, here's Beverly flavor with you, and with Mike I have Micah flavors, right? So it's a both and, like same but different. It's like, yeah, that's what it is. It is same but different, right? But it's been lovely to get to know some of you more. Mike, I knew, I've known Micah since 13. So we have like 8 years, right? An 8 year history, and we are close. Even though she lives in Amsterdam, we've met up several times. But you and me, we had talked, but not that often, just you and me. We did that on your podcast. And then he's like, so here's a person that, like you say, it is that voyage of mutual discovery. It's like, what's there? And what happens in me when you say something, when you share something, when you come with your experiences and your ideas and your thoughts? So it's been magnificent. You know, I do the snippets from these.
Mm-hmm.
And when we started, I didn't pick out that many, but it's like I have Caspian is kind of on me saying, you need to make sure you use these, because I can get like 40 snippets out of one of these conversations. What do I do with them? Yeah, that's a good question. So I'm trying to, you know, I tweet some and I put some on Instagram and whatnot. But almost all of those I could easily turn into a blog post. So this is, you are now my 23rd conversation in this season. I have Allison and Mikey left the fifth conversation with them. And, you know, even if it's just 20 snippets per episode, that's a heck of a lot. It's like, I could do nothing else, you know, because there is so much. And it just, you know, it pops in me. So it's really filled me up. It's like I have a lot of potentials, you know, materials, yeah, blog posts, ideas, things to do about it. And I've really, really enjoyed it, because a lot of the, you know, especially Gary and Allison, I've been conversing with, you know, over Zoom every other week or so since the summer last year. And so many times it was, oh, I wish we'd recorded this because here's such a gem. Like, now I have them recorded. And then now I won't record them anymore. So what, you know, it's like, but it's, I've really enjoyed doing it, and I will continue doing it. So I'm trying to fix people for season two. I have 3 of the 5 slots filled.
Awesome.
Where 2 of them are fairly new people to me that I don't know that well. And 2 of them, because there will be a trio. One of those will be a trio conversation. I know very well, and so do you. So that will be a bit of a surprise. And then we're trying to see if we can fix a date for a conversation with all of you from this season.
That will be really interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure we will be able to get everybody on at the same time, but then we can do it in kind of two episode thingy. So, because it's like I'd be interested to hear if, you know, have you had the same type of experience? Has it been really different? And, you know, would you do it again? He's like, no, I'll never. Or, yeah, any day.
Yeah. It's been really interesting for me through the various Zoom platforms to talk to some of the other folks, and particularly Allison. I love the videos she does, because she's a master of the silence. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is. It is. And she's lovely to talk to. It is so, it's like, I knew this before, but having these conversations and actually putting them out there is like, it's a kind of a public statement for me going, look at these amazing people. There are such amazing people out there. And I know these five, you know, but I'm hoping that that's one of the things that people who listen maybe take away. It's like, oh, where's my interesting people that I can have this type of meandering conversation with where, you know, there's no goal, there's no end point, there's no agenda, there's no bullet points, you know, saying this is what we have to get through, otherwise we have failed, or, you know, it's like, it's just,
no. Yeah, it's no marketing. We get so much marketing.
Yeah, it's just this, yeah. It is just, who are you? Who am I? Who are we? What's cooking at the moment? Well, great pasta, obviously, right?
Pasta, yeah. Me and carbs, we go way back.
Here too.
Again, it's that, with the cooking, it's a chance to ask what feeds me. In that case, literally. But it's, you know, sometimes it's pasta with a little bit of prosciutto and peas, and sometimes it's a giant salad. But one of the things I have learned over probably the last 3 to 5 years is that what you pay attention to is what grows in, you know, it's like the title of Allison's video series is Time and Attention. And it is that attention in the intentional energy of paying attention lets you do stuff. It lets you write a blog post. It lets you pay attention to what you eat. So in all of dieting, literally all of it, doesn't matter what, you know, whether it's, you know, you have to eat grapefruit with toothpicks or whatever. It's just paying attention. When you pay attention to what you eat, usually you eat less because you're paying attention. And that is pretty much how every single diet on the planet works. And it's what you pay attention to grows.
Yeah. Yeah. Last reference to Twitter, I read a tweet this morning that said that if you want to live a good life, do what you love, eat good stuff, and spend time with those you enjoy and love. I was like, yeah, pretty much. There you go. You know, maybe throw in some sunshine and movement too, but you're pretty well set there, you know. And all of them are about paying attention, right? Knowing what I love, doing what I love. Is also one of those things. And it's been, that's one of the things, I mean, having these conversations with you guys have kind of upped my game when it comes to having deep and meaningful and intimate conversations. So that I I kind of have them everywhere. You know, with people I'm, you know, with people from the most diverse, you know, I meet them in different settings. There's my colleagues at work. There's the clients I coach. There's the people in the neighborhood who help, you know, we have this fetching waste, vegetable and fruit from the local store, their local grocery store that they can't sell, but it's too good to throw away. Up until December of last year, they threw it away, but now we come and we buy it and we then tend to it, you know, take care of it. So people involved in that and, you know, people on Badoo, is like wherever I meet people, you know, I had a really lovely conversation the other day when I was down by the ocean, skinny dipping in the, and it's just about to get cool enough. And I came up and there was this man standing there and we started to talk, an older gentleman, you know, just, it's just lovely. So maybe that's what this series has given me, an extra boost in being open to and inviting deep conversation, kind of regardless of where I'm at, whatever the arena level situation, it's possible.
Yeah, which that takes some openness and bravery. It's a lovely thing to have.
Yeah, it's a good thing to seed, too, out into the world, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, maybe that's a wrap.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, it feels kind of sad. It's our fifth and final conversation. Yeah, it is.
Well, in the series, it's not our last conversation, I imagine.
No, it's not. Most definitely not. I think we can be fairly certain of that.
It's been wonderful. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for being willing to put yourself out there together with me in this way.
Yeah, grateful for the chance. You know, it's a learning for me, you know, stepping into that vulnerable place. I like the fact that I'm still learning.
Yeah, don't ever stop.
Nah.
You had a good role model there, though, in your dad.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, somebody who's taking calculus at 77.
Yeah, he's like crazy, but sure. Whatever floats your boat, right? Okay. So I wish you a great day.
Thank you. You too. Enjoy the rest of yours. And I will send the recording on.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.